Welcome to House of Comments, the final House of Comments of 2023. I'm still just about Charlotte Henry, and she's still just about Emma Bunnell.
I'm a shadow of Emma Bunnell.
she's at some point was Emma Bunnell. Now Emma Bunnell, I'm going to start by a big personal U-turn on a policy issue and say I agree with Rishi Sunak on something. Wait for it. I've been converted to one of his big policy lines.
Okay.
Pedicabs. I went, no, yeah. Don't laugh,
no,
mate.
No. Look.
No, no,
they're
listen.
Bloody annoying. The idea that this is what's going to win in the next election is what's hilarious.
No, I'm voting Tory now because of it. Right, I went into...
You've always been a Tory, Charlotte.
Listen, I went into central London, had a little walk with my mum to see the lights. Lovely. Completely disturbed by these nutters on pedicabs, blasting music, blasting up and down the streets. I'm in. Go, Rishi. I'm in.
I mean, they are... Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think, to be honest, it should not be a national political thing. It should be up to the mayor of whatever city.
I'm now campaigning. I'm fully in.
But the idea that this should be something that the Prime Minister put in his conference speech was quite extraordinary.
Amazing. I'm in. Actually, well, yes, I'm in. Right. Let's talk about less important policy issues than pedicabs.
Sure.
I've started with the big things. We're going to go...
Obviously, yeah. Priorities. Yeah.
We're going to go to the insignificant matter of the economy. So inflation, really big drop. Very positive news on inflation. It's down to 3.9% now. Now, we'll do all the usual caveats. But, you know, obviously doesn't mean prices aren't still rising. Although, of course, you don't want, you know, no inflation or, you know, there's a balance. And it's about 2% tends to be... the level they aim for, the bank is aiming for. But it's, you know, we can't really say it's anything to do with government policy. It's really in the hands of the Bank of England, but it's a win for the government in the sense that that is what they've, you know, stuck their flag in. So it was good news. Less good news is that Britain is on the brink of a recession / might already be in a very mild one, according to, well, that was an economist said that, yes. Ashley Webb, UK economist at Capital Economics, told the BBC that. And it's because there were some revised figures and the UK economy contracted, was made smaller by 0.1%, according to some revised figures for July to September.
So it was 0.3.
After it was first calculated to have risen by 0.2%, it contracted by, in fact, contracted by 0.1%,
okay,
according to the revised figures. Now, obviously, it was flat the quarter before. Two quarters of negative growth is a technical recession, and therefore it's really on the brink and, you know, quite concerning for the government. Now, look, these are all small numbers and margins of error, and of course the point of that is growth is so sort of non-existent that everything is on the brink of things, and, you know, No government at all wants to oversee a recession. I think politically it's particularly painful for a Conservative government. But so, yes, it's a sort of right on the brink of things, and we'll start the new year off very delicately for the government.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I worry that this big conversation that happens when we contract by these small amounts is masking the much bigger conversation we should have about the fact that we've been stagnant for about 15 years.
I think that's right. I do agree with you.
And that is a much, much bigger worry. People's wages haven't really gone up for 15 years. Our economy has not really grown for 15 years, essentially since the 2008 crash. And that is, you know, we're a G7 country, or at least we were. Who knows if we still are. We are a major economic player, whatever the actual definition is. And we just have completely lost our ability to be that.
And it's not necessarily...
A decade and a half.
Yes, and it's not necessarily true of equivalent countries. I think that's
the point.
Obviously, in 2008, everyone's economy was shattered.
Everyone's economy contracted in 2008 quite significantly.
And the same during COVID.
And the same during COVID. But where we differed in our response to 2008 was that after 2010, we decided that the thing to do was the anti-Keynesian take of cutting public spending when things were in recession, which actually is generally like no other major economy did that. And lots of other major economies recovered much quicker than we did and got their growth back. And I think that it is not, I mean, right-wingers will argue about it because right-wingers don't want to spend any public money on the state. But, you know, there is a massive, massive correlation there. And it is important to be able to say that.
You're perfectly entitled to say that. I don't entirely agree. I think there was...
Well, no, because you were part of the government that did it.
Well, I wasn't, but...
Part of the party of the government that did it.
That's a more reasonable... Yeah. But I think there was a case for cuts back in 2010. I think, you know, things were, you know, delicate. But your political view is entirely valid as well, and I understand that argument. I think as a country... We obviously do need to have a very serious look at how we can promote growth. Now, you know, I'm not going to go full Liz Truss on you. I'm really not. But we do need to have a more serious conversation. And the sort of gently, gently Jeremy Hunt. Again, I'm not really endorsing the Liz Trusses, which was just a complete apocalypse.
We need to stop pretending that Liz Truss is the only person who wants growth. She's got a very, very extreme, very wrong-headed idea about how to get it.
And also proved
that she... But that doesn't mean that it's either growth or anti-growth.
Sure. And she also proved she and her colleagues were totally incapable of implementing it.
Well, certainly they were incapable of implementing it in such a way that wouldn't completely spook the market. Yeah,
correct, exactly, which means you failed to, you know, you can't do it if you can't navigate that. She completely and utterly failed. But yes, we obviously are going to have, this is going to be, I think, the key, this and probably the NHS are going to be two of the key discussions we're going to have in 2024 as we head to an election, because people have to feel better in their pockets for a government to have any chance in an election. And look, we'll probably discuss NHS later towards the year. So this is going to be a huge, huge topic. We're having a Christmas party, so we're not going to have a massive ding-dong over the economy today.
Like all the best parties.
Like all the best. I've never been to a good party where the conversation was the economy. But we have to top it off at the top of the show because it's hugely, hugely significant and will be a top of, I think, the worry list for Rishi Sunak and Jeremy Hunt over the Christmas holiday period.
Well, that and some by-elections.
Some by-elections, very good. It's almost like we planned this show. Peter Bone, the recall petition against him succeeded, no surprise. He therefore has lost his seat. It is vacant for the moment, which is Wellingborough, which is in Northamptonshire. And so there will be a by-election in the new year for his seat. He was deeply unhappy about it.
Is he seeking re-selection? I'm never sure about the rules around these.
He hasn't clarified yet. He said he'll speak more in the new year. We don't know if he's going to stand, say, as an independent. He cannot stand as a Conservative.
He's lost the whip and he can't get it back.
I believe so. He won't stand in this election as a Conservative, but he obviously is entitled, like anyone, to put his name forward for election. Yeah. In fact, I'll read you his statement if you like. He said, "The recall petition came about as a result of an inquiry into alleged bullying and misconduct towards an ex-employee, which was alleged to have occurred more than 10 years ago. These allegations are totally untrue and without foundation. I will have more to say on these matters in the new year. May I wish you and your family a Merry Christmas and a peaceful new year." He was very cross at the sort of threshold level. So 10% of the electorate is what you need to trigger a by-election. It's 13.2% of his constituents signed that recall petition. So that's clearly pretty comfortably past the margin.
Did he vote for the original legislation?
I'm not sure.
Petition up?
I'm not sure.
Because it was government legislation. It was a Tory government legislation. He was almost certainly voted for it.
I would assume you're right, yeah. And so he was very cross because he said 86.8% of his constituents didn't want to get rid of him.
That's not how these petitions work. But
it isn't really how these petitions work. So it's not like, by which you mean I assume that it's not like a yes or no question. It's not like a referendum.
It's not like everyone went, right, you have to make a decision, make it now, yes or no. It's that some people cared enough to go out of their way to sign a petition. Now, it's not the hardest thing in the world. No. I'm not going to pretend that's, you know, the most incredibly difficult thing in the world. But yeah, they had to take an active step to sign a sign a petition. And more than 10%, the legislative threshold that was passed by his government did so.
Am I misremembering? There was basically no row about the recall legislation, was there?
It was considered quite weak at the time. When it was first put through, I think there was quite a lot of democracy campaigners who said it was almost completely toothless, which is hilarious given how many MPs we've now lost to it.
Well, indeed. Just out of interest, I've just had a look at what the size of the electorate in Wellingborough is. In 2018, so not the most accurate, but would have been what voted in the 2019 general election, presumably, it's 78,313. So over 7,000 people have signed that petition.
Yeah, which is a decent chunk of his electorate. And if he's saying 86%, how many of the percentage of that constituency didn't vote for him?
Sure, I mean, we could get, this is what happens in by the nature of our system. Absolutely, you know, we could get all back in the weeds of this. I can have a look at his.
I seriously doubt that he won a majority of eligible voters.
I'll have a look. But I'll have a look at that while I ask you the question. Do you think 10% is too low? I'm a bit conflicted about whether I think it should be a little bit higher threshold. Not by much.
If 1 in 10 of your voters is that cross with you that they think that you should face a re-election, it's not that you lose your seat, that you should face a re-election. I think that's all right.
Okay, I will tell you that in 2019, Peter Bone got 62.2% share of his electorate.
Of the electorate. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, but just.
So, what was turnout?
Turnout and then was. Do the math,
because this is what I'm saying. He's claiming 86% of the people are the other way. I'm saying if you want to make that argument, make it about your election too.
Yeah. So, here's actually, I've looked at the official parliament site. So, his majority was 18,540. The electorate is 80,000, actually 765. And the turnout was, as you rightly say, 64.3%.
So he did not get a majority of the electorate. He got a majority of voters, not the electorate.
No, he got 32,000 in an electorate of 80,000.
There you go. See, much less than a majority.
Right.
So, like, if he wants to make that argument, he has to be consistent in it. And I very, very much doubt Peter Bone is in favour of electoral reform.
I think I can confidently say he is not. anyway, perfectly valid point. Yes, he got a majority of the people that voted. He did not get a majority of his constituency.
Yeah.
And of course, I think you can make a very reasonable point that considering the strength in which he did win the election, to have succeeded then in turning 1 in 10 voters against you probably indicates not very good things about you.
Well, to be fair, I wouldn't necessarily say that. What was the Labour vote? What was
it was Labour was 26.5.
Both of those parties will have been agitating to get people to sign the petition.
Yeah, Labour got 26.5% in that election in 2019.
So there you go. So I think I wouldn't. If you are anti-Tory, even if you are in a significant minority within a constituency,
Yeah, the incentives to get people to sign these recall petitions and, sure. and parties, you know, the Labour and the Lib Dems, they do go out and try and get
Of course. I mean, basically, if every Labour vote, you didn't need one Conservative voter from 2019 to vote for the recall petition because there was more than enough Labour voters. There was almost enough Lib Dem voters to tip it over the edge.
There you go. So I wouldn't... I mean, I think there's an anti-politics mood in the country generally. That is allied to, but not the same as, the anti-Tory mood. But I think if you give an electorate under those circumstances the chance to kick a Tory politician when they're down, they're going to take it.
Yeah, and on, we should say, on the basis of quite serious and unpleasant allegations. Now, Pete, as he made clear in his statement, Peter Bone very strongly refutes those allegations, as he's entitled to, but they are pretty unpleasant allegations.
Yeah, I mean, and they're not like, I mean, they're quite significant in the stuff that he's accused of doing. It's not grey area stuff. You know, he can refute that whether he did it or not, but the allegations themselves are quite strong and grim and, you know, not something that you would want to see from an elected politician who has power over people.
Well, that's exactly my point. My point is, if you've heard these allegations, even though he's denied them, which he seems entitled to do, it's enough. It might be enough to put you off that politician if you're a local constituent. That's my point. Anyway, we'll see how that plays out. As I said, you know, the majority is 18,540. We've seen bigger majorities than that go, haven't we?
We have. Who came second? Labour or
It was the Labour Party with 26.5%, 13,737 votes.
And where is Wellingborough?
Northamptonshire.
Okay, so it's more likely to be a Labour competitive than a Lib Dem.
Yeah, the Lib Dems only got 7.9%, 4,000 and a bit votes.
Well, I mean, I know that there'll be some bar charts coming out any day soon. But I suspect it will be interesting.
I'm actually going to push back on that a bit because from some of the conversations I have had, I think the Lib Dems are trying to be really disciplined for once on where they target. I'm not sure they'll bother spending much time and money on this one.
I think they're being disciplined about where they're targeting in the general, but I can't imagine that they won't be sending activists into...
Oh, I'm sure they'll campaign. I'm just not sure how
and
much effort.
And again, with activists come bar charts.
I mean, whatever, we can make jokes about leaflets if you want, but I'm just not sure they're going to spend that much time. It'll be very interesting to see, because obviously they have got quite confident.
Well, and the other thing is, of course, that there is a potential other by-election in another Labour-facing seat.
This is Scott Benton you're talking about.
Scott Benton's seats at Blackpool South, where I think we talked about this last week. The interesting thing will be how well or not Reform does.
Yep.
And they will be the kind of third party bucking to be part of the conversation.
Yeah. From what I could see, there was no UKIP-y Reform-y party in 2019. I guess they didn't want to stand against Peter Bone.
No. Well, that's it. There was a lot of people standing down, not standing in those kinds of Tory seats.
Quite right.
So we shall see. But
Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that in the new year. It will be a difficult start to the new year for Rishi Sunak. Right, enough of this.
Yeah.
It's Christmas time.
And there's no need to be afraid.
There's no need to be afraid. Right. It's been quite a year, hasn't it, Emma? I'm glad I chatted through it with you.
Yeah, I'm shattered. I'm absolutely shattered. 2023, it's not like it's been as awful as, say, 2020.
Sure, not by a long stretch.
But I'm just so exhausted.
Yes.
And I just think everyone's starting to feel that way.
I agree.
And it's like, okay, we're not in disaster zone anymore, except that the world's at war and on fire and various other
things. I don't
know
why I'm laughing, actually. Maybe I'm laughing because otherwise I'd cry. But
yeah. But we are... I just think everyone feels so ground down.
There is that sense.
And I don't think that's just in the UK, though. I think where we are in our electoral cycle does play a role in that. But I think it does feel particularly pronounced at the moment with just the government that just feels like it's completely running on fumes. And there's just so, there's just no sense of momentum anywhere.
Boom, boom. Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Talking about lack of momentum, that they momentum have no momentum. It's they've fallen apart completely.
What a shame. I know what you mean. It does feel like there was quite a funny cover on The Economist, which I bought just because it made me laugh and it made me think of you. The front of The Economist last week was the strategic genius of Rishi Sunak, and it was a picture of him in a small boat. So I was going to send you a picture of it, actually. It made me giggle. But look, he is going to have a difficult 2024, isn't he? We can't pretend otherwise. There's a lot of challenges to start the year. I'm not sure how many of them will relieve as the year goes on. Some will. Maybe the economy will improve.
Maybe we'll be in recession.
I think there's not inconceivable scenario where it's both.
As we've discussed, it's not going to jump 5 points. It's stagnant either way. It's dancing around either side of a recession, but it's not going to suddenly go way and get more whizzy.
Presumably.
What have they done that would make that happen? Where's the Inflation Reduction Act equivalent from this government?
Well, of course, you're right. There hasn't been a grand piece of legislation like that. It's Christmas. We're not going to have a debate about Securenomics. We're not. but there obviously hasn't been an equivalent piece of legislation. You're absolutely right. Some of that, I guess, is because it's the Bank of England's responsibility on inflation and interest rates and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but that's the same in the States with the Fed.
Sure. But I also think that there's going to be more people renewing their mortgages in the first quarter of 2024. Mm-hmm. So that's more people who are probably going to have to pay more than they are now, almost certainly. Less than if you did it 6 months ago. Thanks very much. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So there's all that going on. There are these by-elections. I personally can't see Labour win. Sorry, I personally can't see the Conservatives holding either of them.
I mean, I'm less sure about Wellingborough. Northamptonshire isn't.
Yeah, maybe.
That part of the Midlands is under-examined and more red wall-y than a lot of places people think of as traditionally red wall.
By which you mean you think Labour can win it or not?
I think they can win it. I don't think it's a shoo-in.
No, I mean, obviously not with a 18,500 majority.
Yeah, we're all being a bit, casual about these big majorities since things like Nadine Dorries and that, but
sure.
I think there are pockets of the Midlands that the politics has been significantly overlooked that are more sticky to the Conservatives than places in the North.
Interesting. Yeah, you might well be right. Yeah. I mean, this was obviously a pretty stronghold seat for
a
decent amount of time. We've done the numbers already, 60% of the people that voted for Peter Bowen. So, yes, you're right. I'm trying to think of what... There'll be some positive things as well for 2024. And I think there probably will be. Maybe I'm being naive. Am I being naive?
Well, there might be an election.
There might be an election, which will certainly be good for our content, if nothing
else. Yeah. I mean, either there's going to be an election in May, October or January, people are saying, basically.
Let's place a bet. I want to say on record now when you think the election will be.
I think the most likely is October, but I've been moving back towards May.
No, I want a definitive answer.
Well, if I have to give a definitive answer, if I were a betting woman, I'd put a tenner on October.
Okay, I'm going May. I think after our conversation the other day, I'm going same day as the locals.
I don't think it's that unlikely.
Yeah, I'm going saying there's the locals.
Don't think they'll drift to January.
No. And make people campaign over Christmas and all that nonsense. Absolutely not.
I just don't see that happening.
No chance.
October, just because it is in one person's gift, and that one person would like to be a longer prime minister than a shorter one. No pun intended.
I was going to say, come on.
And
by the way, sorry, I did see him in person the other day. He walked past me when I was in Portcullis House. I mean, he made me feel tall.
Yeah, I have friends like that. It's amazing. But yeah, I just think...
I can make short jokes, by the way, because I'm only 5 foot tall. So I can make short jokes.
Well, you make me feel tall because I'm 5 foot two and a half. So.
Yeah, oh, no. True story, Emma makes me stand next to her just so she...
It's true. It's absolutely true. And neither of us ever wear heels as well.
Oh, not if I can avoid it.
Yeah. But I think the reason I think it's more likely is because I think that Rishi Sunak is quite a selfish politician. And if it's in his gift and his gift alone, then it's in the balance of his interest to do it in October because he gets to stay on longer.
I don't know if he's selfish. I think maybe there's some vanity, as there inevitably is with anyone that becomes prime minister. Then there might be some vanity and some pride in there.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, it's entirely in his self-interest to look slightly better in the history books. But I think the balance of that is how quickly can he get himself to California? How much pain do his backbenchers put him through? And when does he decide that enough is enough? And if that becomes the drumbeat, particularly after this one, potentially two by-elections, then he might just go, oh, sod it. Elon, I'm coming. I'm coming, done. Elon.
I'm done. Possible. There's one, it's been put to me that there's one very significant person we should watch out for. And that is Richard Holder, who is the chairman of the Conservative Party and, you know, has worked in the Conservative Party in communications and so on for a number of years. And now finds himself in the position of party chairman, sits in cabinet, he's in the cabinet office. Actually, I don't know if he sits in cabinet, but he's in the cabinet office. And obviously his motivations are different to those of Rishi Sunak. Mm. I think Richard Holden cares significantly more about the future of the Conservative Party and the future structure and electoral basis on which the Conservative parties can build, presumably in opposition, than Rishi Sunak does. So he may well be the one. And obviously, just for people that know, the Conservative Party chairman is the head of their campaigns, basically. He is the one that will, you know, controls ultimately the campaign and the campaigning organisation. I think there may... It's been, again, someone put this to me, and I, as they were explaining to me, it made a lot of sense. I think there is a world in which he's going, the only way we save councillors and some good local mayors and so on is by doing it all on the same day, getting the pain out of the way, have big campaigns to try and keep some people, and he pushes for May. I think there is a world, and also says we can't get the troops out twice in 5 months.
I'm sure that's true. It's just not necessarily because of the idiocy of it just being in one person's gift.
By which you mean the Prime Minister. Yeah.
Then what Richard Holden would have to do if Sunak dug his heels in is say, push a vote of confidence.
That's never going to happen.
He's not going to do from the position of party chairman appointed by one Rishi Sunak.
No, of course not. No, it would be an internal battle, an internal debate.
I mean, if he's the men in grey suits, as we used to call it, sure.
Send for Sir Graham.
Well, I mean, Senator Graham is the more nuclear option. If it's him just trying to persuade Rishi Sunak he should go earlier rather than later, I'm sure there are people trying to do that. It's just how much Sunak is willing or able to listen to them.
Yeah, and we've said before there's also a world in which that causes you more pain because it's one big day for people who want to kick the Conservative Party to give them a great big kicking up and down the ticket. So there's arguments for and against what I'm saying. But it struck me when this person put it to me that that's quite an interesting thing to keep an eye on.
I mean, if you remember the party, the expectation management game from this year's local elections, where the Tories were briefing that they were going to lose 1,000 seats.
Yes.
And everyone was like, that's ridiculous, expectation management. And they lost 1,100.
Yeah.
I just don't know how confident they are on how well any sense that they could keep any seats would be.
Yeah,
how much are they really, really willing to give up to save Andy Street? Because that's essentially what we're talking about.
It's exactly what we're talking about. How much do you want to save Ben Houchen, Andy Street, and so on?
Ben Houchen's a goner, man.
Do you think?
I think with all the allegations around the Teesside Development Corporation, I think with the collapse of Red Wall, I think with things like HS2 and things like an advert going out this week, something like £350 million
for the NHS
being spent in London, not for the NHS this time, being spent on London transport projects with the branding Northern Rail. I mean, they're just, I think, to be fair, I was really shocked when Ben Houchen won in the first place.
You and everyone else.
Yeah. But I know that there is a lot of very real disillusionment with Labour in that part of the world. But I think that the chance they gave the Tories in 2019 the promise of that has not been fulfilled.
Yeah, look, we don't live there, so we don't live on the ground.
No,
so
but
I
it's
don't
a part of the world I know a little bit.
Sure.
Because I used to be married to someone who was a smoggy, so...
Yeah, yeah.
I've eaten a Parmo.
God. Have you seen that amazing picture of Keir Starmer in sort of army fatigues with the NATO troops?
No.
Oh, it's amazing. It's going.
I mean, is it a classic of the genre? They all do it.
A classic of the genre. It's going on every leaflet, my friend. It's amazing. He's got troops. He's got snow.
He's not tall either.
Well,
I mean, he's no Rishi Sunak, but he's...
I mean, short people will conquer the world, as we're proving. But it's an incredible picture. Fair play to whichever staff has set that up. There's very serious soldiers. There's Sakir looking very, strident and actually, you know, in his fatigues. Very good work by all involved. Very, very good. I'm trying to think. I'm going to ask you this because I still haven't got my answer. What was your sort of political moment of the year?
God.
I
That's
know.
That's a really good question.
It's quite hard to think of. Because there's been lots of...
Like, internationally, I think it would probably have to be what happened on October the 7th. Mm.
I was hoping for something pleasant and quite fun you were going to come out of it, but not the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust. But okay.
No.
I know what you're getting at.
But I mean, in terms of domestic policy... It's really hard to say. There hasn't been big moments. It's been kind of incremental gains from Labour and fuck-ups from the Tories. And it just has felt... It hasn't felt like, oh, that's a moment. It's felt like, oh, that's a drumbeat. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, absolutely. And I think to a significant extent... you're right, because there've been set pieces and those kind of things, but there haven't been the sort of I feel like I'm tempting fate here, but there haven't particularly been the dramatic moments we have sometimes come accustomed to. And I think in lots of ways, that's thank goodness.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes, absolutely. Look, we've got the same Prime Minister we started the year with.
Yes, well done, everyone.
Chancellor of the Exchequer we started the year with. And we've got the same on the other side.
Yes, so well done, everyone.
So, you know, you've all kept your jobs. Well done. We haven't gone through quite the same drama as we went through in 2023. But that's not the benchmark, man. It's just not the benchmark.
No, no chaos is not the benchmark. You're right. I'll tell you a moment. I'm going to go. You're going to sneer at me, and that's fine. And you're probably not wrong, too. But I'm going to go with the coronation, not because of I'm a monarchist particularly, because actually I didn't. Anyway, not because of Charles or whatever. That really wasn't it for me. But I thought it was quite significant. First of all, Penny Mordaunt and the sword, great work.
She did look fabulous. I didn't watch any of it, but I saw the pictures.
Of course, exactly. And also that, you know, the presence there, the multi-faith presence there, the presence of a non-white prime minister. I thought all of that was quite a big moment in British history.
What about all the arrests, Charlotte?
I was a bit conflicted on that. Because, did we discuss this? Did we chat about it? I'm trying to remember.
Honestly, too far back to remember.
I know, because I was deeply conflicted about it at the time, if I'm honest. Because I believe...
What kind of a liberal are you?
Well, I'll tell you, because I believed absolutely in the right to protest. But I also think, like, messing up a day that people care about is a bit mean. I thought the police were heavy-handed.
Oh, my God, Charlotte.
I thought the police were...
Only nice protests that don't upset anybody. Oh, protests that don't work are really great.
I thought the police were pretty heavy-handed.
They were terrible.
Which I never approve of.
I mean, they arrested Graham Smith from Republic, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And a bunch of people who just stood near him.
Yeah, exactly. So, as I say, I was sort of... depends what day of the week it is I wake up, what I thought, if I'm honest. Because, as I say, I believe absolutely in the right to protest. And would defend it very, very strongly, as you might imagine. But I also find those people kind of annoying.
Yeah, but you can't get arrested for being annoying.
Well, I think you should. No, you can't be arrested for being... Anyway, that's where... So I was convinced, probably they should have been allowed to get on with it so long as it was just a bit of shouting and waving of placards and so on. That's probably... Like, that's probably where I fall.
I can't believe I'm more liberal than you, man. This is just embarrassing to me.
No, I don't think you are, because I thought I'd always condemn the heavy-handedness of the police. And you and I have had some quite upsetting conversations about that early in the year. I haven't forgotten one of the moments of the year on this show for me, I think it was this year, was when you asked me, there'd been a few incidents, and you asked me, and I've never forgotten it, would you get into a car with a policeman by yourself?
Mm.
And it really took me back, because if you remember, there was a whole load of very unpleasant
incidents. Yeah, absolutely. And still ongoing.
Indeed. So anyway, I think probably, yes, I did think they were pretty heavy-handed, the police, and some of the, like, quite a few of the arrests were really, really, and the way they went about it was really, really unnecessary.
I mean, I think I'm going to challenge you from a slightly different perspective on the coronation being a political moment of the year.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because it's got, I mean, it's an unelected monarchy. It's got nothing to do with politics.
Oh, it's a nonsense, obviously.
It might have been a national moment of the year. I think I would be hard-pressed to fight that argument.
Sure.
Much as I would like to, and much as I wish it weren't true. But I'm not sure it was a political moment of the year.
I was thinking more of the political leadership that was there.
I liked the bit where one of the Australian commentators didn't recognise Liz Truss. That was funny.
Well, this is from the year before, but it is totally bizarre that...
Oh, that's right. That was a funeral, wasn't it?
In the history books, she will be the prime minister that was at the Queen's funeral. That is... the longest serving monarch and the shortest serving prime minister. That's totally bizarre. But anyway, yes. So that was One, I thought, yes, you're right, it's a national moment. But I thought the political leadership then, what it showed in some ways about the country, because you're right about the sort of nonsense of an unelected monarchy, was quite significant. So there we go. Yes, we've had how many housing ministers this year? I don't know. I've lost count.
And no new houses.
And far too few new houses. Well, let's end on a positive note, I think, because we're going to wrap up the year. I've thoroughly enjoyed doing the show with you. I think we've had some fun. We've had some differences of opinion, but that's the point.
Absolutely.
We've showed the boys that it can be done.
Yeah, and I think it's really important because I think we've said this before. Lots of female-led podcasts are about non-controversial things, and it's very much a love-in. And the point of us is that we don't agree on everything. We don't agree on an awful lot sometimes, but we can do it in such a way as we can have quite a big, you know, ding-dong, but while still being absolutely aware that we're still friends at the base of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, your Rory Stewart's and your Alistair Campbell's and your Ed Bulls's and your George Osborne, it's all very nice, but come on.
Well, they just sit there going, oh, isn't it nice that we all agree now and we're all centrist dads? And I'm like, no, that's not politics. That's not actually how politics is supposed to work.
And, you know, it's a bit, well, we just need some more female voices in politics, yeah. Don't we?
Absolutely.
And we're pleased to have a little bit of a go at it. If you would like us to keep having a go at it, please do head over to Patreon, where for about £6 a month, you can support the show. It makes a real big difference. You'll get both of our newsletters as well included in that. We'll sign you up to a paid membership for that. And it just means we can really keep going with this show, and it would really mean a lot to us, your support. We love you listening to us. If you can't, we know what time of year it is. Believe us, we know. If you can't at this moment support us in a paid way, really makes a difference as well. If you can share the show, recommend the show, leave a rating for the show on iTunes or iTunes, is this? I really should know that, in Apple Podcasts, and leave a, you know.
Yeah, of the two of us, you're the one who should get the tech stuff right.
Shocking. But if you could leave a review for us, wherever you listen to your podcast, that also makes a huge difference. Make it a nice one. And we will really appreciate that. So that is patreon.com/howtocommentspodcast, by the way. Link is also in the show notes. Another thing we always like to flag at this time of year is Crisis at Christmas. It's an organisation that means a lot to both Emma and I. For £30, you can help someone stay in one of the crisis hotels over Christmas, which, as Emma described last week, from her personal experience of working there, makes such a huge, huge difference to those people. It's a cause I've supported for a number of years now, and I really hope you can join us in doing that because it means a lot to both of us.
Absolutely.
Well, there we go. Tell people quickly where else they can find you. Not that I expect you to be doing much over the next week or so. I hope you're going to have a rest.
I'm going to do one short newsletter saying Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everybody, and that'll be it. But I do have a newsletter called Hard Thinking on the Soft Left. And I'm also on various social media platforms at @EmmaBurnell_.
I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across the social medias. If you head over to theaddition.net, you can find the blog and a way to sign up to my newsletter there, which is newsletter.theaddition.net. It covers all the media and tech stuff, and there's a lot going on. As we said, if you sign up via Patreon, we'll give you access to our paid newsletters as part of that. We're at HOC Podcast on Twitter as well, if you want to follow us there and give us some feedback. We'd love to know what you'd like us to talk about in the new year. But until then, have a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we'll see you in 2024.